Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to the Pit, Politics in Trucking. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be throwing out the issue of the day and then taking your calls and refereeing the discussion for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that takes the political topics of importance and relates them to the trucking industry. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to the Pit, and here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the Pit. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. We'll be here for the next hour talking about whatever it is you want to talk about, taking your calls and answering your questions. I've got a couple things I'm going to get started with, but it's open phones tonight. Anything you want to talk about, politics, trucking, business, whatever it might be. If you're listening online and you'd like to join us here live on the call, pick up your phone and dial 347-884-8327. That'll get you in on the call. Once you're on the call, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1, and Lisa will get to those calls. Let's do this. One of the things that I'm definitely noticing on all of the shows, all three nights, is that the questions start off really slow, and then towards the end, we get a lot of questions, and I end up not getting to them. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it is, let's get it in early. Let's get started. Again, press 1 on your phone. You'll talk to Lisa first, and then I'll get to that. I'm going to start off with kind of a rant tonight, but I'm going to read this article. Articles like this just, stories like this drive me nuts. And part of it is because I've seen this firsthand, and it might not sound like such a big deal, but it's just it's a part of what's gone wrong in our country for a long time and what we're doing to our kids. Now, the only, I can't call it good news, but at least this wasn't in the U.S. this time. This was in Canada. So if there are any Canadians on the line, jump in on this one. But this happens enough in the U.S. as well. And like I said, I've got firsthand experience with this. Here's the story. In yet another nod to the protection of fledgling self-esteem, an Ottawa Children's Soccer League has introduced a rule that says any team that wins a game by more than 5 points will lose by default. How stupid is that? How do you lose because you won? The Gloucester Dragons Recreational Soccer League's newly implemented rule is intended to dissuade a runaway game in favor of sportsmanship. The rule replaces its 5-point mercy regulation, whereby any point scored beyond a 5-point differential would not be registered. Now, instead of just saying, look, you can only win by 5, we won't count any more than that, now they're saying, if you are winning 5-0 and you score one more goal, you lose. I would love to talk to the people who came up with this rule. This is just stupid. Let's see. This comes from one of the players. They should be saying anything is possible. If we can get 5 goals really fast, well, so can the other team. People grow in adversity. They don't really get worse. I think you'll see more leadership skills being used if a losing team tries to recuperate than if they never got into that situation at all. That's from one of the players, one of the kids. They know better. than this. Here is a good comment from one of the parents. I couldn't find anywhere in the world, even in a communist country, where that rule is enforced. He said the organization is trying to reinvent the wheel by fostering a non-competitive environment. The league has 3,000 kids enrolled, ranging in age from 4 to 18 years old. Everybody wants a close game. Nobody wants blowouts. But we don't want to go by those rules that they come up with, he said. Heaven forbid when these kids get into the real world, they won't be prepared to deal with the competition out there. Another father whose 4 and 6-year-old boys play in the league said, the intended goal of the default lose rule might backfire in teaching life skills. If there's one team that's consistently dominant and one team that's not, well, that's life, he said. Yeah, I agree. He said he would be in favor of temporarily handicapping a team, for example, reducing the number of players on the field over ensuring a team loss for a high score differential. I'm not even in favor of that. Why handicap the team? The team is the team. We put 11 kids on the field. You play 11 kids. If you're getting your ass kicked, too bad. Go practice harder. According to the league's new rules, coaches of stronger teams are encouraged to deter runaway games by rotating players out of their usual positions, ensuring players pass the ball around, asking players to kick with the weaker foot, taking players off the field, and encouraging players to score from farther away. Now, that's probably the only paragraph in this that I agree with. But why do we have to throw in the stupid rule that if you score one more goal, you lose? Let's look at this again, because I used to coach, and this is a great way to take advantage of one of those games where you're just really that much stronger than the other team. As the stronger team, you can use that time to develop even better skills with your kids because you can get players in who don't normally get to play a lot in a competitive game. That helps develop them. You do move, if you're a good coach, you move players around to new positions and let them develop new skills. And when you're in a dominant game, you can do more of that because you're not worried about losing, obviously. You can get your, in soccer specifically, you can get your kids to start passing the ball around more, which is something that's always hard to teach them. Having the players kick with their weaker foot. Now, as long as this is the coach's choice, that's great. It develops a new skill in the players. Taking players off the field, and I'm not sure what they mean by that, and encouraging players to score from farther away. Again, all of those things, if they're voluntary and it's up to the coach, all those things help develop more skills in the player. So this whole idea of we have to make everything fair and we don't want anybody's feelings getting hurt. What a load of crap this is. And this, I'll tell you what, this club has kids from 4 to 18. I started coaching 4-year-olds in soccer, and I coached soccer for several years. I coached wrestling for a long time. And I was in a club that was supposed to be recreational, not competitive. And you knew that. But their rule was, in the recreational league, they didn't keep score. That's a stupid rule, too, because I will tell you that even the 4-year-olds kept score themselves. They knew who scored. They knew who was winning. They knew what the score was. So to try to convince kids that if you're beating another team 5-0, but you score one more goal and now you're the loser, everybody knows you're not the loser. You're the winner. Everybody still knows the other team got their ass kicked. So who are we trying to kid? The parents? I think we're trying to make the parents feel better, not the kids. The kids who got their ass kicked are not going to walk off that field saying, oh, we won. It's just not going to happen. The kids are smarter than the parents. It's usually the parents that screw this stuff all up. It's just amazing to me that we would try to do this. And I was on one season, I was on the losing end of a deal like this. I was in a fairly recreational league because I had a new team that hadn't even been playing together for a season yet. But because of our record the season before, it's kind of a long story, but there were too many teams in the recreational league, or actually it was a mid-level competitive league. I got bumped up to a traveling state cup team league. We got our ass kicked every week. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't easy. But those kids grew, and as a coach, you can take advantage of that. 5-0 was nothing. I got beat 15-1 in a game. We scored the first goal in about 30 seconds, and we got all excited. And then we got our ass kicked for an hour and lost 15-1. But you know what? And that happened many, many weeks in a row. We were way outplayed. We should have never been in that league. But you know what? We developed a lot of good players that year, and I used that year to get kids to realize that's what happens when somebody commits to something. The teams we had to play were all committed to playing soccer. They traveled. They practiced probably twice as long as we did every week. And you can use that as an example to say, here's what you can do if you put your mind to it. And these stupid rules of we're not going to keep score, or the mercy rules, unbelievable what we're doing to our kids with rules like this. Jump in, tell me what you think. I've got a couple other articles I might come back to, some trucking stuff, but I see we do have a bunch of questions, so I'm going to get started on those. If you want to jump in and comment on that, by all means, press 1. On your phone right now, Lisa will screen your call, and we will get to your calls. Let's go to Georgia. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Kevin, I don't know if you know about it, but I most likely think you do. Ohio has just now passed a law for guesstimate, whatever you want to call it, where the cop can guesstimate your speed without having to use a radar, laser gun, or anything. And with the new CSA 2010 rules and the points that goes against our driver's license, you want to tell me how we can beat this law, how we can win without having a major overhaul somewhere?
Yeah, I did read this, and in fact, I had it on my list of possible things to talk about tonight.
This is one that's got me ired.
Yeah, I'll bet. You know, and I drove a big percentage of my miles in Ohio. That's where I started driving. And we've always known that Ohio is one of the toughest states on speeding. I mean, they always have.
That's what makes it funny. They pass the laws, up the speeds up now. To me, it seems more like they're taking revenge on truckers and everybody that got the law passed where everybody's driving the same speed.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I mean, I think this is kind of crazy. It opens up, you know, a huge can of worms because at now, no matter what, I mean, if you get a ticket now in Ohio, you're going to get the ticket. I mean, it's almost going to be impossible to beat it because they really don't need any kind of proof whatsoever.
Okay, another thing. I'm not trying to take over your show, sir.
No problem. That's what we're here for.
Any drivers that have GPS units with a speed control system in it that records your speed, use it, activate it, is my suggestion.
You know, here's the other thing. And because I started driving in Ohio and I drove there a long time, you know, and the truck speed limit was 55 for years. In the first, I'll bet, 5 or 6 years that I drove, I got one ticket a year, and it would always be that stupid about 62 miles an hour, which, you know, really doesn't seem like speeding. But it was one of the things that got me started on the whole, I just need to drive 57 and be done with it. You know, just set the cruise at 57 because
killers.
No, they're not. See, I was in complete agreement with you till you made that statement. That is absolutely
false. I just meant to me it seems like, because I've done had somebody almost run under my bumper. And I speeded up, and the cop gave me a ticket.
Well, you should have never sped up. You should have never sped up.
I don't want to be responsible for somebody being dead.
You're not responsible. You're out driving. You're doing everything you're supposed to be doing. You're driving a safe, legal speed, and if they run into you, you are in no way responsible for that. But look at the facts.
We're the billboards. We're the ones that get sued, whether we're right or wrong.
No, you will never get sued as an owner-operator and lose anything. I challenge you to find me one case where an owner-operator was ever sued individually. Now, the carrier might get sued.
That's where I said we, I was including all of the
But let's look at this logically. Take every safety study that's been done. What is the number one cause of truck accidents? Number one, every category, whether it's lane change, rollover, rear end accidents, whatever it is, what's the number one factor every time?
Somebody's not paying attention usually.
Nope. Excessive speed. Every time. So every study out there shows that trucks crash more often when they're going fast, not when they're going slow. We don't cause accidents when we go slow. We cause accidents when we go too fast.
Well, that's where me and you just took a difference of opinion on.
Well, it's not opinion. It's fact. Go look at the studies. So split speed limits do not cause. What's that?
The more important thing is how is drivers going to win when they're losing their jobs because of the new CSA 2010 rules?
Nobody.
And
wait a minute. Now you're getting
estimates of Ohio. Because what's going to happen is drivers are going to lose their jobs because every point counts against driver's license, and that means you only have so many points before your driver's license is pulled and so many tickets before a company fires you.
You're confusing two things here. What does CSA 2010 have to do with your driver's license?
You have points correlating in that system.
No, they don't. CSA 2010 points have nothing to do with your driver's license.
And it goes... And goes against you. You only have so many points because the carriers are fined about everything you've done now.
Now, wait a minute. Show me anywhere that says if I get so many points under CSA 2010, I lose my license or I get fired. There's nowhere in the regulation.
That's what it's going to boil down to. With the carriers being punished under the new rules, too, for the drivers, yes, that will boil down to it.
Well, who should be punished? I mean, if we're violating
carriers are responsible for some things. Yeah, drivers try to do the honesty. I know two or three cases, and this has already been published in Landline, but I don't have the references for you, where drivers got fired because they was trying to be safe.
Give me an example. What do you mean they were trying to be safe and they got fired?
They reported a trailer that was unsafe to drive. Two different drivers got fired. And I know this because this was in Landline, and
wait,
I read it in there somewhere.
Okay, hold on. Let's say you're in that situation. You've got a trailer. You know it's unsafe. You report it to the carrier, and that carrier is willing to put your life and everybody else's life at risk.
And that's what's
going to
happen.
They want you.
Carriers are pushing issues.
Can I finish?
Drivers are trying to make a living out here.
Can I finish my sentence? Hold on. Why in the world would you want to work for a carrier who would put you in that position? They wouldn't have to fire me. As soon as they told me that, I would quit.
The point
and if
is,
we all did that, if we all
we've
quit
got
the carriers,
all kinds of people that's pushing everywhere, everything's being pushed to the limits. Everything's being pushed to the limits. Sooner or later, there's no wiggle room for anybody. And everything ultimately comes down to us, the drivers that's out here on this road.
Of course it does. Who else should it
all,
down
everything
to?
Everything boils downhill.
Well, who else should be responsible for the safe operation of that vehicle?
But when you are responsible for the vehicle,
who else should be responsible for the
mechanic?
Safe
don't repair something, and they tell you it's repaired. You're not responsible for that mechanic. You have to take the word of that mechanic.
No, you don't. Give me an example. Give me an example of a case where that could happen, where I, as a driver, would not know that that truck was safe or not.
I'm not going to argue with you anymore, Kevin. I like your show. I brought my points up, and it's up to others to solve.
Well, the one thing we've got to...
All I can do is mention it and try to get a grassroots effort started to get something done. That's all.
Well, wait a minute. Here's what makes me crazy about...
You have a good day, Kevin. I'm not going to get in an argument with you.
Okay. Here's what makes me crazy about this kind of just going off the handle. When you say get a grassroots effort started to do something, do what? Which, I mean, if we would have stuck to the Ohio speed limit law, that was one thing. But then we went off on split speed limits, which is all the facts show that split speed limits are not unsafe. They don't cause accidents. Trucks traveling too fast cause accidents. So then we were off on CSA 2010, and then we're saying that CSA 2010, you're going to lose your license. Then we were saying the companies are forcing people to drive unsafe equipment, they're going to get fired. You can't fly off the handle and lump everything in together and make these crazy statements and then say we have to do something. Do what? I mean, let's get focused. Let's focus on one thing. Otherwise, we're just a bunch of nuts running around screaming that we're going to do something. What is it that we want to do? If the Ohio law is something you want to fight, then get focused and fight the Ohio law. But if you start rolling everything else into it, you're not going to get anywhere. And if you start making arguments that aren't based in fact, you're not going to get anywhere. That's really what I think the problem in the industry is that we don't use facts. We don't stay focused. We start making wild claims. And we will lose every time if we do that. So all I was trying to do with you is get you to focus and realize that many of the statements you're saying are going to be very difficult to back up with facts. Let's go to... Matt in Minnesota. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. Evening. I got you on speakerphone out of the phone.
Oh, it sounds okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you started talking about soccer. I happen to be sitting in my car right now with three boys that all came from a soccer game this afternoon.
Did they know what the score was?
4-0. I got 0.
4-0. Boy, it was close. Two more goals, and you guys might have lost.
Yeah.
But isn't that the stupidest rule you've ever heard of?
Do you guys think you should lose if you get too many points?
No. That's kind of dumb.
If you were beating a team 6-0, would you feel sorry for them and would you try to slow down, or would you just keep on kicking their butt?
I think kicking their butt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. That's why we work so hard all week long. That's why we practice. That's why we work hard so that we can go out and enjoy that. And if we really kick somebody's butt, well, so what? Then they need to work harder. Unbelievable. With a rule like this, there isn't a single kid on the losing team, there isn't a single kid who would walk off the field feeling like they won just because of this stupid rule.
But I do have another subject I'd like some people to maybe do a little research on. It could be a topic one of these weeks.
What's that?
And it has to do with, it's going to relate to the health care bill. It's going to relate to the debt in our nation, the obesity problem, and all that. I think we should do away with farm subsidies and save all that money, and people would probably get healthier.
Hey, you know, one of the things that is a great topic, and one of the reasons I don't talk about it enough is because I don't know enough about it. and I've got it on my list. I'd like to study them more. They're pretty darn complicated. And if you don't, you know, if you haven't been involved with them or if you haven't read about them, I don't really understand them. But interesting that you brought up subsidies, because one of the things that I wanted to talk about tonight, and I'm going to read this just real quick, because they just passed this. The House of Representatives last week passed the American Jobs and Closing Tax Loopholes Act. I didn't even see this one. I didn't even know they were voting on this one. There's a ton of stuff in it, but one of the things that it does is it retroactively extends the biodiesel tax incentive through December 31st. And the tax incentive for biodiesel is just like farm subsidies. We're taking a product that on its own can't be competitive. This even goes back to the soccer thing. Biodiesel on its own can't be competitive. Why not? Is it too expensive to produce? It's not. Did we have some problems with it? Maybe people were afraid of it because it was clogging fuel filters and causing us problems. But because it couldn't be competitive, we give the entire industry huge tax incentives. Where does that money come from? That's our money. Why are they taking our money and subsidizing the biodiesel industry? It says that they created tens of thousands of green jobs since the tax incentive started 6 years ago. But when the tax incentive went away, the industry lost thousands of jobs. They had to close down plants, and they're struggling to survive. Why? Because nobody wants that stuff.
I heard it was 80% of the factories shut down or were sitting idle or somewhere in that neighborhood.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah. But that...
It's the same thing. So now they brought the tax incentive back. So now let's think about this. We had tens of thousands of jobs. We built all these plants using our money because obviously these companies didn't have enough money of their own to do this. Then when the tax incentive goes away, all those jobs are lost. We close all the plants. Now we're going to bring the tax incentive back. They'll hire people again. They'll open up these plants. Why is the government manipulating business like this? That industry shouldn't exist unless it can exist on its own and compete on its own.
Well, yeah, I mean, their argument is that, you know, they helped to get it started, you know, to get it off the ground and up and running, but even now that it is, because, I mean, biodiesel is a very popular item, but they still can't survive without, you know, subsidies,
right,
or they'll never survive. And, you know, that's the farm subsidy actually is subsidizing that at the same time. So it's
right,
double subsidized.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they claim they created tens of thousands of green jobs. How green really is biodiesel when it's all said and done? Does biodiesel really help the environment?
Well, not that I know of. Because, I mean, for the highest percentage... You know, well, they did go up to some 10% and 20% blends, but the most common was a 2%. And my personal experience is I lost, you know, a little bit of fuel economy when I run it. But I figured it was about a break even when you were getting biodiesel cheaper. But, you know, how does it any greener when you burn more, you know, you figure the blend. So in the long run, you're going to burn probably about the same amount of petroleum by the time it's all said and done.
Right. And what if we start to look at the big picture? Now, what did it take us to produce that biodiesel? What impact did that have on the environment? How many farm tractors did we have to run to harvest the crop or however we're producing it? How far did we have to transport all of the stuff to the refinery to produce the biodiesel? What kind of impact does the refinery itself have on the environment? So after all is said and done, after we've done all this stuff to produce the biodiesel, and it's really not replacing petroleum, where's the benefit to the environment?
Well, it's the whole global warming thing.
I wish I could find it. I read an article once about the impact over the lifetime of a Prius hybrid compared to the impact to the environment of a Hummer. And
yep,
the Prius was worse for the environment.
Yep, I heard that. It was on a radio show one night talking about all this, and that because of the lifespan of a Prius is only about 100,000 miles, and the Hummer's lifespan is 200,000 miles, the cost, you know, they did the whole study from, you know,
start
building it. Yep,
right.
The
every
whole
component.
Pollution to
right.
build it and the amount of fuel it burned over its lifetime, and then the disposal. And that's where the Prius, you know, with the batteries and all that, that actually creates more pollution over its lifetime than a Hummer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's insane. So that's part of the problem with this whole green thing, is we really don't know what's better for the environment or not. I don't think biodiesel's really any better for the environment. And we're tax subsidizing it, calling it green.
Well, the whole, I mean, you know, my statement on the whole green thing is, you know, I believe in air pollution, but I don't believe in global warming or climate change or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, and before my lifetime, but, you know, you hear the stories and you've seen pictures. It's not a theory or anything like that, but from leaded gasoline and all that back in the 50s and 60s and how bad air pollution was. And almost every major city had a brown cloud hanging over it.
Right.
You know, we've cleaned up the environment quite a bit over the years.
Absolutely, we have. And I'm all for that. I like the environment. I like trees. I like our national parks. I like all that stuff. But this is no longer about keeping things green. This is about subsidizing entire industries with our tax dollars that have nothing to do with the environment.
Yeah. But I'll give you a couple of documentaries I've watched recently that, you know, some people might be interested in the subject I'm talking about. Most recent one was Corn King. And it's about two kids that had graduated from college and couldn't find a job, and they found out, you know, the whole study about how the current generation is probably not going to live as long as their parents did.
Right.
Started doing some scientific study and did a sample on their hair and found corn, fragments of corn in their hair, you know, from the food they
ate. Uh-oh. Matt? I'm not sure what happened there. Lisa, did you take Matt off the air? I think she did. I'm going to move on to another call. I think Lisa took him off the air. Let's go to Kansas. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening, Kevin. How's it going?
It's going great. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, what's on my mind, quite frankly, is the dire attitude of truck drivers. And what I mean by that, we all like to sit back and whine about the perception of the public is that they don't like truck drivers, but I want anybody to look in a truck stop tomorrow morning when everybody pulls out and look at the filth.
Yeah.
Where our worst sin is, go out to the desert out in California and look at all the pee bottles sitting there.
I know.
And think about a family going out there with their kids, saying, hey, let's go out and look at the sites, let's do some sightseeing. And they go out and they see all those pee bottles and go, well, that's the truck drivers doing that. You know, we're our own worst enemies. You know, it's a situation that we all need to, when I went to CMC last year, you have that fellow that's there with the, I think he represents Freightliner that wears the tie.
Yes, Henry.
Yes, and that's that's the perception that all of us need to, you know, we don't have to all necessarily wear ties, that's not what I'm saying, but that whole attitude of cleaning up our acts and being proud of ourselves, you know, going to a truck stop and look at the way people dress and, you know, don't tie their shoes and, you know, and just, you know, and throw their trash. You know, most truck stops are pretty damn good about having garbage cans everywhere. And you'll see these fat guys in the mornings open the doors and throw their trash out the door instead of walking. It's sickening. It really is.
I know. Well, you know what else bothered me? There was a story about the pee bottle thing, and I know I bash on OIDA a lot, but there are times where I think they need it. They came out, and instead of coming out with something about how we could fix this, their response to this article was, well, it's not always just the truck drivers. Cars do that too. That's one of the worst responses we could ever have to that. Because
yes, it is.
It's not like we're going to be able to do some scientific study and figure out that this percentage of the bottles came out of a car. We know that the majority of those bottles, I don't have a number, but we know for a fact the majority of those bottles come out of trucks. There aren't that many of them coming out of cars. So to take that, well, it's not just us, the cars do it too, that's the worst possible response we could ever have to that.
Yes, sir. I agree. And, you know, it you know, labels all of us as pigs is what it does, you know.
I know.
And, you know, I think that all of us, the point being is all of us need to try to I don't think it's the guys that listen to you, Kevin. I think that, you know, most of them are not the guys that listen to you. And quite frankly, the guys that would come to a CMC would not be the guys that would do that. But I'm just saying, you know, you wonder why people don't like truck drivers and why the CMC is coming up. I mean, not the CMC, but the 2010, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
We're all worse enemies. You know, we all need to clean up our own acts, really.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate when you and I talk like this or we get into these discussions sometimes at the CMC or whatever. You're right. I don't think it's like we're preaching to the choir. I don't think the right people are listening for us to do any good. You see people like Henry who he wears a tie, and that is it's kind of an extreme. I hate ties. I as much as I'd like, you know, perception and all that, I would never do that. I'm glad he does, and it works for him. But the other thing that you find is that the people who take the little bit of extra time to make themselves more presentable are almost always successful.
And I would agree with that. Yes, sir.
People who look like slobs usually aren't. They're the ones who have the problems with all the regulations. And I'm not big on regulations, but part of the reason we have so many is because we screw up so much ourselves.
I agree. That's my whole point, is that this industry kills itself. You know,
yeah.
We're the ones that you know, when you pull up and get out walking to a scale house, and I'm sitting there talking to one DOT, you know, representative, and a guy walks in, and you go, God almighty, what's that smell? And you wonder, why do they think that truck drivers are filthy bastards? There's a reason they think that. The guy, you know, hadn't taken a shower in 4 days. You're wondering, what was he thinking, you know?
Well, anytime there is a stereotype of a group, the stereotype exists for a reason. People don't just make it up. It happens because that's what they see over and over and over.
Yes, sir. And my whole deal is, you know, it's like when y'all started the program a few months ago of taking pictures of people being filthy. And you know, to me, it, you know, that's the biggest part of this industry is that most of us, not most of it, but most people don't understand the perception people have is actually
right.
It's the correct perception. A lot of these guys,
it's for reason, yeah.
Yeah. And everybody calls in and says, oh, you know, they're doing this and they're doing that and they're raising new laws and they're going to do all this kind of stuff. We deserve it. You know, we're our own worst enemies. We deserve what we get. And, you know, all of us need to work, you know, to change that perception. You know, truck drivers used to be respected people. We're really not anymore. And I don't respect most of them.
No, I know. I grew up when it was a very respected industry. I mean, I grew up in a third generation. So, but and you know, the other problem I have with our industry, and I know my first caller tonight, Elizabeth, I know I upset her, but I get a little crazy when we go off on these rants, and CSA 2010 is a good one. Look, to me, CSA 2010 is another what will turn out to be a failed government program. It's not going to be run well. It's confusing. The point system is ridiculous. But if we all run around saying CSA 2010 is going to put all the drivers out of a job, that's not a legitimate argument. I promise you, I could go drive another million miles under CSA 2010 and never be concerned about my job. There is nothing in CSA 2010 that would make me worry about my job. If you're doing the right things, you're not going to get violations. And even if you do get violations, if you're doing the right things, your violations are going to be so much smaller than all the people who aren't doing the right things that you're never going to be in danger of losing your job. The only people who should be worried about it are the screw-ups who aren't doing things right.
Right. And say, you know, through you, I got, you know, on with Landstar, and really, you know, thank you a lot for that. You know, through the program last year, I learned to do that. But anyway, right off the bat, Dan, if I didn't get a over hours, and then like 2 weeks later, didn't get an over an axle. And you know, both those were 21-point violations. You know, 7 points, but you know, because it's first year, and I was depressed. I went through a depression, and Eldon called me up because you know, I think that Eldon could tell through the chat line that hey, old Big Jack's not feeling very good. And when I talked to my representative over at Landstar, she made me feel a lot better, and said basically the same thing you did. You know, I'm a very good driver. I never speed. You know, I'm very careful, yada, yada. And I think that will come out, like you're just saying, in the long run, I think we're all going to be, the good drivers will be rewarded in the end. Right now, it's kind of an overkill, you know.
Right.
And, yes,
right.
I did have two violations that tore me up. But, you know, in the long run, I don't think it's going to kill me. You know what I mean?
And look at what it did. It got your attention.
Yes,
you know, we all make mistakes. We all get busy. We all, you know, put things off or whatever it might be. And if there's no consequences to those kind of actions, we'll just fall into that pattern. But instead of that happening, you looked at the consequences and said, hey, wait a minute. I better wake up here, and I need to be extra careful for a while because I really don't want another one of these.
Exactly, Kevin. You're exactly right. Yes, sir. And I think, really and truly, I think that part of the program is going to be good for everybody, for the public,
right,
the drivers, everybody. And my whole point about the whole deal, I wish that really and truly they should say when they go up and see somebody throwing their trash out the door, they all give them 50 points or whatever. You know. And get that guy out of the business, quite frankly. We don't need people like that in our industry. We really don't.
No, I agree. Hey, Jack, good stuff. I'm looking at the clock, and I got calls all over the place. Let's see. Where am I heading off to? Let's go to what just happened. All right, here we go. Oh. I've got calls everywhere. I don't know what happened here. Let's go to Cecil in Southern California. Welcome to the program. Or South Carolina. Holy cow. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
I was under the impression that Ohio wasn't a law. It was the Ohio Supreme Court made a decision on officer training and the fact that they deal with speed all the time, that it's more of a perception thing. If 15 other cars are going, driving at a safe speed, let's say in like rain or a construction zone, that an officer sees one car passing the rest of them and they assume that car is speeding, that's where that ticket comes into play.
Yeah, you're correct. It wouldn't be correct to call this a law. It's not a law. I mean, nothing in the law has changed. It's simply the state Supreme Court said, we will trust a law enforcement officer to be able to write a ticket based on the visual estimates of what's going on. And a good example is what you just said. You know, it's raining, you've got a bunch of cars, and maybe he's been sitting there with radar or laser or whatever it is, and he knows traffic's flowing at about 60, and all of a sudden a car or a truck comes blasting by everybody. Well, whether he gets that particular vehicle on the radar or the laser doesn't mean he can't write a ticket, because it's pretty obvious he was speeding.
Yes, sir. I mean, well, I live in Florida, and I've seen instances where there'd be like a funeral procession on a street with two lanes, and they're going 30 miles an hour. The speed limit is 55. You see a car blow by them at 55, 60 miles an hour, and I've seen cops write ticket after ticket after ticket just for an unsafe speed. It's not necessarily what most
right.
people will call a speeding ticket, but it's an unsafe speed.
Too fast for conditions.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's all I had.
I appreciate it. I just read this today, and I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into it. But I think it's like some of the other things that if we're not careful, we need to choose our battles wisely. And I'm just not sure that this is a really good battle. Let's go north of the border. Greg in Canada, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How about you?
Good, good. Just happen to live outside of Gloucester, and I want to start my own grassroots organization. I want to get the management of this Gloucester Soccer League to replace Gary Bettman in the NHL, and the Leafs might then win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, there you go. Let me know how that works out for you.
Oh, man, that's so stupid. You know, they started this with junior hockey years ago, taking out the contact in it and saying, you know, we're not going to allow contact. Sport is about competition, and it's what teaches our children to survive.
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many good lessons to be taught in pure competition. And when you take that competition away, or you do this, we're going to make it fair, or we're going to level the playing field, or we're going to make it more fun. The more we do that, the less our kids are able to really survive in the real world.
Well, if I was a coach in that league, I think if we got 5 goals up, I'd pull my goalie and let the other team score 5 and start again.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And you know what? And like I said, I've been there. I got put into a league that we should have never been in. We were so far over our heads. We got our butts kicked week after week after week. But there were a couple times where it was obvious that the other coach was like pulling kids off the field, or he's shouting at his kids not to score until they, you know, everybody on the team touches the ball. Well, I'll tell you what, that made our kids feel even worse. And I would still use that part of it and say, look, if you don't want to feel this bad, we need to work a little bit harder. But all these rules that are designed to make them feel better, they don't make the kids feel any better. If you come off that field and you got, and the score was 6-0 and you're the team that lost, there isn't a player on that team that's ever going to feel like a winner because of that rule.
Well, we agree with on that one. I want to touch on a couple of things real quick. Next week, Tuesday through Thursday, is the big check for the year, right? The ride check?
Yes.
And that, I haven't heard anybody talking about that. And your first caller there, you got on about split speed limits. And you were saying, oh, there's been studies that show that they're not dangerous. Well, there's been studies that have shown both, Kevin. There's been studies showing they are dangerous, they're not dangerous, there's no difference. You know, the studies are made to favor whoever's commissioning the study.
I agree. Let's look at one thing, because I agree. But let's look at one thing. When it comes to split speed limits, there are a lot of studies, and like you said, depending on who's commissioning it, we get a lot of mixed results. So there doesn't seem to be a clear consensus about whether split speed limits are dangerous or not. But there's a very clear consensus about the faster a truck travels, the less safe it becomes.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100% on that. Now, you know, they brought up the speed limiters here in Ontario. And incidentally, last month they checked over 10,000 trucks, and only 98% were in compliance with that. But
yeah,
I'm totally against that. Yeah, well, we all are. But,
yeah.
You know, being in the position, running this highway every night now with a governed truck, and it's not necessarily even a split speed limit, but the cars on this highway travel so much faster than the trucks. As a truck driver out here driving a governed vehicle stuck at the speed limit, it doesn't bother me. When I get into my car on the weekend and travel the same highway, it drives me out of my mind, because before they put these speed limiters in, this highway flowed beautifully. The trucks would get out and pass, get back in, flow with the traffic. Now you have all the four-wheelers trying to drive 70, 75 miles an hour, which the police allow up here, and all the trucks doing 60, and the amount of stupid, dangerous moves that you see being pulled by the four-wheelers, I'm sorry, the speed limiter has caused a split speed limit, and it's made things a hell of a lot more dangerous out here.
Here's the problem I have with this. First of all, I don't like speed limiters because it's government imposed. It's this idea of leveling the playing field or whatever it is. I don't like speed limiters. Split speed limits, I just don't think this is, and I guess the reason I don't care much about it, and I don't think it's that big of a deal, is I drove, you know, a big part of a 500,000 miles at 57 miles an hour. And to say that I was the cause of the unsafe conditions is absolutely wrong. It's the car doing the stupid stuff that is the cause. Let's address the cause. There should be no problem with me driving 57 miles an hour. I don't care if the speed limit's 70 or 75. If they put a minimum speed in, it's going to be probably 45. At 57, I am completely legal. How can I be the cause of the problem?
It's not that you're the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem is the differential in speed. Yes, you're driving legally. You're driving at the speed limit, and we all do. But we all know the four-wheelers go a lot faster than we do. And
then
let's address the four-wheelers. Let's address the problem.
If they're driving unsafe, let's address them, not me. I'm as safe as I can possibly be.
And that's the problem. They didn't address the four-wheelers. They addressed us. They stuck these stupid speed limiters on us. And now, as far as I'm concerned, it's really backfired on what's happening on the highway.
No, I agree. I think to impose it, to put the limit on the truck itself, I think was absolutely wrong. But the argument against split speed limits drives me crazy, because we keep using this argument about how unsafe it is. But that's I'm not sure what is the industry arguing for. Do they want the trucks to be allowed to go faster? Because, see, that's what everybody is really arguing for. They're not arguing for safety. If they were, they would be arguing that instead of a split speed limit, we should slow the cars down, bring the cars down to the truck speed limit. That would be safe. They're not arguing for safety. They're arguing so that they can go faster. Well, then if that's your argument, make that argument. Don't make the argument that it's unsafe. So it's not that I either agree or disagree with split speed limits. What I disagree with is the stupid arguments we make in this industry.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. And well, I say it's been proven up here, and anybody that runs up here now and sees this, it's just going to get worse as it starts going farther, you know, across the country, across North America. Because I mean, there's other places looking at imposing this now.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think speed limiters are horrible, and I'm not. I know I always end up arguing, and it makes me sound like I'm on a certain side. It's like every time the broker argument comes up, I end up defending the brokers, and it makes it sound like I'm pro-broker. I'm not. I'm just pro-business, and I think we make bad arguments all the time, and this split speed limit becomes the same way. It always sounds like I'm in favor of split speed limits. I'm not. I could care less what they do with speed limits. What I'm against is the way we argue it in this industry. The first thing that comes out of somebody's mouth is how unsafe it is, and yet then they want the trucks to be allowed to go faster. Well, faster trucks are really unsafe. That's proven. Now, if you want to drive 70 or 75 miles an hour in a truck, go ahead. I don't want to take that right away from anybody. If that's the speed limit, then drive it. But don't argue that you're safer at that speed. You're not.
Well, see, the problem is they're trying to improve safety with devices instead of doing the most important thing and the easiest thing they could do is put more police out in the highway. Put the police out there, enforce the bloody laws that we have,
yes,
and quit just coming
yes
down with a blanket on everybody.
Absolutely.
I mean,
that is correct.
A speed camera, a speed limiter, they don't do anything to improve safety. They're a tax grab. Put a cop out in the middle with a radar gun, pull the bad guys over, and don't worry about the rest.
I agree completely. Let's enforce what we have and hold each individual responsible.
Hey,
I agree. Hey, you know, here it happens again. I see hands up everywhere. This always happens. You know, we start off this segment kind of slow, and then we just get literally slammed with questions when I've only got 3 minutes left. I'm just not even sure if there's one. Let's go here. Ed in Colorado, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I work for a company of around 1,000 road trucks, and they've been fiddling with the idea of trying to get better fuel mileage. They put on super singles on trucks with 370s. They put the Bridgestones on and a few sets of the Michelins. And I've suggested to them a few times of what they could do, and it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other.
Right.
What I was thinking was taking an older truck, like you said, make a Signature Series B model, leasing mm-hmm it to them or renting it to them, let them drive it or put it in their fleet and show what kind of better fuel mileage is attainable.
Yeah.
And then go to them and say, okay, now we can do this to your trucks. I guess the question is, I mean, they wouldn't go as far as doing the overhauls and such like the Bruce's motors, but just between tires and putting on the OPS system, they could gain, I would say, $1 million a year.
Yeah, you know, we could do all of what we could call the bolt-on stuff, the modifications
yeah
that don't require, you know, engine overhauls. But, I mean, we could even go as deep as the manifold. Manifold
yeah,
all the way back, or you know, but with a couple $1,000s of investment, we could save probably easily $10,000 a year per truck.
Yeah, and see, I run a set of steer tires on a truck, and then when it's coming towards wintertime, and when we took those off and put on recaps, we lost over a full mile to the gallon.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's one of the problems with wide singles is that the industry just kind of assumes that all wide singles are supposed to save fuel. I tested the Bridgestone Great Tech wide singles. They're horrible tires for fuel mileage. So what happens is a fleet puts them on, their fuel mileage doesn't improve, and they go, oh, well, that doesn't work. It doesn't necessarily have to do with the wide single. We have to look at the rolling resistance. And on the Bridgestones, it's horrible. But, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I mean, I think there's a ton of opportunity out there to go to fleets and be able to prove to them the kind of savings. I mean, if I didn't have everything else going on, I could make a great living just doing that, just going out and consulting with fleets, because there's so much money to save them. Hey, we're all out of time. I'm sorry I didn't get to the calls. You guys have to jump in sooner. Tune in again tomorrow night for questions from the Audio Road, and be sure to join in 30 minutes for the live show on SiriusXM. All right. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.